KFKA and the Colorado Inn present Rams Weekly. Here's Brady Hull, Kevin Lytle, and Chris Abshire.
It's time for Rams Weekly, our weekly look at all things Colorado State. This time of year, primarily basketball, but we're not that far away from spring football, guys.
That's
we're
right.
not that far away. Getting closer.
Only about 6 weeks or so-ish out now.
It's hard to believe. Kevin Lytle, Chris Abshire in studio. Well, let's start with the men's hoop side of things, of course, and it just continues to kind of be this just a rough go for Colorado State. Kevin, you and I talked about it. They're not getting blown out every single game, which is a good thing, but they're not finding ways to win these close games that they've been in, going up against Wyoming last Saturday. That was another example of a close game. You came back, you made it interesting, but you just couldn't get over the hump and win the game.
Yeah, that game really, I think, encapsulated what this team is. The first 20 minutes, really bad. A lot of sloppy turnovers, just kind of careless. Some missed, fairly easy shots. Defense, I don't think, was very good in those first 20 minutes either. CSU was down, what was it, like 14 at half. It kind of looked like they're going to get run out of the gym. But then, of course, as this team does, shows a completely different side and comes out really good in the second half. The defense was excellent. The offense, you kind of knew the offense would be better. Wyoming can't defend anyone. The three of us could put up 40 on Wyoming. But see, the problem when you build a dig a big hole like that, is it takes a lot of effort and energy to come back. And CSU did come back, briefly had the lead, but it's hard to sustain that level throughout. And, a couple poor possessions or missed chances offensively that maybe could have closed the door. Wyoming gets their chance, a questionable foul call at the end. Wyoming wins.
You mentioned sustaining the energy, and I totally agree with that, just from a perspective of not only do you have to expend a ton in-game like that, but CSU was not a team that was coming into that game in position to be able to expend that much energy, having played those, three overtime games before, a lot of tired legs there. They could not afford to build themselves a hole. I do think it's interesting, though, this team's been inconsistent all year, and that was another example of it, no doubt. I don't think we've seen them struggle, especially in that first half offensively, to that extent. I mean, largely when they've struggled this year, it's been, kind of that revolving door on defense, just kind of, losing games in the 70s, 80s range. That was the kind of slugfest they haven't, they've typically been able to win or hang in all year. So.
It was, I'll tell you guys, just watching that game. I mean, both teams are in a tough spot right now, injuries, everything. But the first 2 minutes or so of that game, I'm thinking, this seems about right. because it was 1-0, 2.5 minutes into this game.
Yeah, at one point I turned to one of the writers next to me and said, these basketball teams aren't very good right now. And a lot of it, is just some disjointedness. Wyoming right now is in that phase that CSU was a few weeks ago, where you have guys going in, now you have a different lineup every night, and that obviously does lead to a lot of disjointedness. So in a lot of ways, these two teams are reflecting each other this year, which frankly, it's not a great reflection that you want to have. It ended up being an entertaining game. Not
sure,
the best played game you'll ever see, but entertaining.
Kind of controversial.
Probably first, big crowd Wyoming guy, is good energy in there. So it was fun. I mean, it was what you want from a border war as far as entertainment. But obviously CSU leaves very frustrated again. And, Brady, I said on the whole show this afternoon, sort of almost just flabbergasted that the results are going this way when, they do play pretty well in a lot of ways. I have some metrics I can circle back to later, but a lot of ways they should be better than they are, but obviously you are what your record says you are.
Sure.
It's kind of easy to forget when we were watching that game. Those were two of the top three preseason teams.
I was just going to ask you guys that.
Yes,
yeah, weren't they the top?
No one had that context, you certainly never would have known, especially watching that first half. It's just a testament to where the Mountain West has risen around them. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, both teams have had horrific injury luck this year.
This is an interesting time for Nico Medved and his coaching staff. Again, we've talked about this. There's no pressure as far as, are they going to let him go or all that stuff? We know that's not even remotely realistic. But it is an interesting challenge for him, I believe, because ever since Nico Medved got to CSU, it's kind of been this upward trajectory, hasn't it? I mean, his first season was an improvement on what Eustachy did the year before. The next season was good. I think they won 20-plus wins. And then, of course, last season, they get into the big dance. So this is kind of uncharted territory for Nico, at least with his time with Colorado State.
And even before that, both Furman and Drake, every year of his head coaching career, the school he was at had more wins than the previous season every single year. Now, obviously, that's not going to be sustainable, and you kind of knew – even though we didn't anticipate these struggles, you knew CSU probably wouldn't match last year. Just, you know, that when you're hitting
those high 20s marks, it's hard.
It's hard to keep matching that. But yeah, this is the first time it's been a big dip, and you know, the first time he's been at a program long enough to go from the kind of total rebuild start, build it good, and then have to keep sustaining and hit a blip in there. You know, again, every program hits those, but this is the first time we've seen Nico Medved have to, you know, do that and sort of within a 10-year place do a mini rebuild within, you know, what he's been doing.
Well, at least you can look at the positive that you can take away from this year, no matter what happens with the coaching staff, with the players. Was at the end of the day, they can all kind of hopefully hang their hat on the Isaiah Stevens thing, breaking the assist record. That's no small feat. I mean, that is a hard thing to do. What was it? Stood since like early 90s, is that right?
Yeah, 29 years ago, Ryan Yoder finished his career well over 500 assists. No one else had ever even hit 500. You know, that frankly kind of looked like an unbreakable record for a while, until Isaiah Stevens showed up and he, you know, he circled that. You know, he said last week that basically day one at CSU, he saw that number and said, I want to go get that. You know, obviously started as a freshman. That's the best way to do it. And he's going to put that thing a long, long way away, you know, because they have, what, 10, at least 11 games left with a first game in the Mountain West. He's playing, I would argue, the best he's played in his entire career, which is quite a high bar to clear. So he's going to put that assist record a long way away, and that's even without the factor of, you know, potentially coming back next year. So he's been incredible. It's kind of a bummer that's happening in a season like this, but, man, Isaiah Stevens is so good.
One thing I don't think we should discount here is just sort of, you know, he didn't even get to play the full allotment of games throughout his career. You think about it, his freshman year, they could have gone to a postseason tournament, got canceled. That's when COVID hit. Sophomore year, they didn't play as many games that year. Because of that, he missed, you know, the first, eight games this year. I mean, so
even his junior year, they missed a few.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean,
and then he was injured this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he's a 4-year guy, but he didn't really get the 4-year schedule, and yet he still did it midway through his senior year. So I think CSU fans need to appreciate, you know, just how efficient, how consistent he's been.
Yeah, and he's about 40, I don't have the number in front of me, but Ellen Nystrom holds the women's, so kind of the CSU overall assists record in the high 500s, but Zay on his pace should break that late in the season too. So he'll likely leave CSU again, whether it's this year or next year, as, you know, men and women's assist record holder, and again, a number that, you know, never say never, but if he leaves that thing, you know, near a 600 or maybe even over 600 mark, Good luck. Nobody's touching that. Good luck next, especially kid.
Not in this day and age of college basketball, where you're unlikely to get, you know, guys who play 4 years at one school, much less five.
Well, it was on Friday, I think, Kevin, we were out at Crazy Carl's Pizza. You popped by, and you did throw out a prediction. You said you thought it would be John Tonjay to get that record-breaking assist.
I nailed it.
You nailed it, man.
It was kind of fitting. Obviously, John has had somewhat of a frustrating season, a little up and down, but very fitting. Those guys have played more than 100 games together. They're in the same class. They're very tight. So kick to Tonjay for a three that he nailed. I asked Zay, you know, is it kind of cool? Like, obviously, you're not going to be mad about whoever gets it, but is it kind of cool that it was John? He kind of smiled, and obviously, they had just lost. So Isaiah was not in a great mood to talk about, but he kind of smiled and goes, yeah, and he goes, that was pretty cool. That was John.
Well, this is something, Chris, we were talking about, which would be cool. You've seen those, like, when great quarterbacks retire, when Manning had their touchdown record and all, or when he broke it his time, and they had the jerseys up of every player and everyone who caught, and they put the amount of touchdown passes from each of those players. Kevin was bringing it up. Like, this, how cool would it be to put like David Roddy up there, John Tanjay up there, all of the players that Isaiah's been with, to see how many assists each one of them have from Isaiah.
I love that idea. Well, also, if you think about it from this perspective, I mean, you know, Isaiah's freshman year, he was throwing assists to guys like Nico Carvacho. That feels so long ago now, but
yeah,
that's kind of the era-spanning, you know, career that he's had at CSU at this point.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we kind of talked to Isaiah and sort of went back to that early, you know, part of his career. I asked him, I said, do you know when your first one was? He goes, it took a while, didn't it? I chuckled because it did. I had just assumed, you know, he has 540 of them. Yeah. Nope, zero assists game one, zero assists game two. Third game, he had five. His first one was a three for Adam Thistlewood, which I think is also a fitting way to start it. So he goes, yeah, he goes, you know, we kind of laugh about it. He goes, but I remember J.R. Blunt and Ali Farouk-Banesh, two assistants, getting on me of like, dude, if you have zero assists, you are not being aggressive enough. Like, that means you're not running the point well enough. So, like, even now, you know, 500 whatever assists later, he you know, has the lesson he kind of learned in those first two games in his head. And yeah, I mean, speaking of Carvacho, he, you know, again, the very humble Isaiah way, he goes, you know, those were easy. You just kind of dump it in. He lays it in. You know, obviously there's a little bit more to it than he's making it say. And even, you know, guys like Roddy, he goes, you know, he did so many things, made it easy for me. I talked to David Roddy Saturday too, and David Roddy says the opposite. He goes, Isaiah made things really easy for me, which, you know, speaks to those relationships. But it's kind of cool going through the history with Isaiah. He has great memory on a lot of it.
Yeah, well, one of the special players, a special young man as well. So congratulations to Isaiah Stevens. We'll see next up, break the overall assist record for all Colorado State women's, men's combined. All right, we'll take a quick break. Rams Weekly continues. How about those Colorado State Rams on the women's side of things? That's a really good basketball team. Also, spring ball is not that far away on the football side. All that and more coming up next on Rams Weekly, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Welcome back into Rams Weekly. We talk everything Colorado State on this program with Kevin Lytle and Chris Abshire of the Fort Collins Coloradoan. Some interesting times, certainly, for the men's basketball team. Interesting for football, too, and we'll talk about that. We're not that far away from the spring practices and scrimmage and game and all that stuff, so we're looking forward to that as it's going to get really cold this weekend. We'll be thinking of spring. But we've talked a little negative. The men's team, we don't know what's going to happen with this group. But I'll tell you what, this women's basketball team, led by, of course, McKenna Hofschild, who's just a superstar, can't quite get over the hump over UNLV, though.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't quite get over the hump on Saturday. I got to be out at Moby for that. Great
nice.
Crowd, about 2,000 people. You know, they really showed up for that game. Great atmosphere. You know, McKenna didn't have one of her best nights in that game, which I think you could look at one of two ways. I mean, obviously, you would have liked her to play well and get the win. But on the other hand, I mean, at this point, they've played UNLV, who's the unquestioned top dog in the Mountain West. I mean, 9-0, has basically a 2.5-game lead on everybody else. You know, you've played them right down to the wire, both home and road.
Both games, man.
I mean, you know, they were right there in the final minute or two on Saturday in Moby. So, you know, I think, and they talked about this in the post game, whether it was Ryan Williams or McKenna or Kaylin Crocker, they all said, you know, they're looking forward to getting them a third time. And this doesn't even just include this year. This goes back to last year, you know, in the Mountain West Championship game when they kind of made a big run in the Mountain West tournament. UNLV was, I'd say, even more a heavy favorite than they've been this year. And they played them, you know, right into the final minutes of that. I think had the ball within a possession in the final 2 minutes. So this team, they know they can play with UNLV. You know, so I think it's more looking ahead to, hey, we're going to take care of business the rest of this regular season, and we're going to prepare to get a shot at them in Vegas.
Yeah, I think this CSU team has kind of leveled up to I guess, close to matching UNLV. We can't say match yet since they're 0-2, but UNLV, I think, is basically as good as last year, but CSU is a little better. And yeah, Brady, I said on your show this afternoon, I hope these two play for the Mountain West title, because I think they're clearly a step or multiple steps above everyone else. It needs to be these two. The Mountain West is almost certainly a one-bid league, so it'll come down to that championship game on the women's side, and I hope it's these two, because they are the best two, and it should be a really fun game. And you mentioned that championship game last year. I was down in Vegas covering that. Really, really fun, good basketball. I would expect it to be the same if it happens again. So I know there's a lot to happen between now and then. Obviously, CSU will look to continue building and improving. But looking down the road, I really hope that's what we're getting in Vegas.
Yeah. That's absolutely a fair assessment to me. And I think you could see it by the way UNLV treated Saturday's game, because the way the players on the court were, the intensity level they had, plus their coaching staff, they were matching kind of the intensity in Moby Arena. I think they legitimately believe CSU is their biggest threat in the league this year. And CSU's proved it. I mean, for example, when UNLV, they kind of did the classic road trip where they went to Laramie first, then Fort Collins a couple days later. They didn't really have any trouble with Wyoming. I mean, Wyoming's basically the second-place team tied with CSU, functionally in the Mountain West. So, They kind of handled Wyoming. They did not handle CSU. I mean, CSU, like I said, right in there till the final minutes. UNLV absolutely. I think they would love it if someone could knock CSU out in the semifinals, so they don't have to see him again in the finals.
Well, McKenna Hofschild, we're talking about some of these great Rams. We talked about Isaiah with the record, and you mentioned David Roddy Carvacho. McKenna Hofschild, like, she is just a superstar. And as Chris mentioned, she didn't have the game that she had against UNLV on the road. That was a monster game, but. Yeah. She's at the point now where she just falls asleep and can score 20.
Yeah, and she's incredible what she can do. I mean, really should be an All-American. Her numbers are incredible, matching or in some ways surpassing what Becky Hammon did in her senior year at CSU. And, McKenna's another one that potentially has another year at CSU. If she were to come back, do another year, get CSU to one or two NCAA tournaments, could potentially see her name, maybe up in the rafters too. She's gone from, her first year at CSU, I'd say she's a very good player. Now she's like, an astronomically good player.
Yeah. CSU fans, you heard it here first. Get that point guard fund and NIL fund.
Get that collective filled up, man.
Number four fund. Get the two number fours on the men women's side back next year.
Exactly. Well, we'll see. They're going at it again. They got, New Mexico coming tonight. Yep. So that will be interesting
basically
there.
As we speak.
Yeah. So, as we're going here, they'll be ready to go. On the basketball side of things for men. For CSU men's, we talked about that, the struggles that they've seen.
Much needed bye week, midweek.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you guys about that. Is that designed by the NCAA? Because I see it all over with teams where, UNC is doing the same thing. They played Saturday. They're not playing again until Saturday. CSU, the same thing. Is that by design? Once you get into conference play a little bit, they're like, okay, you could use a little break. Because then I look at the schedule next week, and they're back at it with, a game almost every other day or every 2 days.
Just how the conference balances out, especially, Mountain West is still in the 18-game schedule. They should be doing 20 games. It's stupid that they're not. There are several reasons, but San Diego State needs to get on board. But it does get you a bye week here, which, CSU, after three straight overtimes and then the tough Wyoming game, you had a lot of wear and tear on those legs. So I think probably good to get a mental and physical reset right now for CSU before what will be a very, very tough road game.
Well, and I think I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. I think this is a valuable kind of off week for CSU in that they've had such a rotating door of lineups, of guys available. Getting this off week of practice where you kind of know your lineup set a little bit, I think this is an opportunity for them, to improve in a way you don't get a chance to when you're playing every 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, and they also, I think, get a chance in this type of thing. I was at practice the other day. I obviously won't reveal the exact X's and O's, so I'm burning trust. But basically, they are working on a few little things and maybe some wrinkles that we haven't seen. And when you're playing a Wednesday and then again a Saturday, you don't really have time to put that in because there's just no time to do that. You're almost just resting and rehabbing. But now they do have a little time to throw a couple wrinkles in, work on some things. And like you said, Chris, now that they know exactly what their rotation is, you can work on those with the guys doing exactly what you will want want them to do in the game. So it helps in that way, too, as well as just getting guys rested.
Exactly. It's not just the chemistry. It's you get a chance to do more self-scouting when you don't have to prepare for an opponent that's 48 hours out.
Yeah, they could use it, as we've been discussing. They can kind of use some self-reflection where they try to make something of this season. Now, of course, we know they can catch fire in the tournament and everything, but you want to set yourself up for a better seed. You don't want to be at the bottom of the barrel and go up against the top teams early in that first or second round.
Yeah, I think CSU would still like to make a postseason. Again, we know NCAA tournament is out unless they get crazy hot for 4 days in Vegas, but there is still a path to potentially get to one of the lower tournaments. I think CSU would like to do that. I haven't specifically asked if they would accept a lower tournament invitation if it does come, but you at least want to be in that position. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, it'd mean you're playing well in the final 10 games of the season. So obviously, for a lot of reasons, they want to be in that position.
Yeah, you get a chance to get guys who are still adjusting to this level of ball, guys like Patrick Cartier, your Joe Palmers of the world,
obviously, Tavy Jackson. The more Tavy sees the floor, the better.
Yes, absolutely. It's how I liken it to, it's almost like bowl season in football. If you can make a bowl game, you get those extra practices. Very similar to that. If you get those extra maybe week or two of practices, it can kind of springboard you into next year.
What do you guys make of, maybe we can talk about this more on the other side, the rest of the Mountain West, the outlook of this conference? Up, down, all over the place, hard to
figure
out.
It's
incredible.
Stock through the roof.
The league is amazing. We're debating off air who's the best team in the Mountain West. I still think it will be San Diego State. I still, if you had to tell me you have one game to win, pick your Mountain West squad, I would pick San Diego State. But, man, on a given night, New Mexico can be great.
Yeah.
They won at Viejas. Nevada randomly can be quite good. I don't think they're awesome, but I think they do a lot of things well. Obviously, Boise State, who CSU is going to see, is playing really well.
Watch out if San Diego State is breaking the 80-point figure. I mean, like they did the other night. That unlocks a different level for them.
Yep.
No question. It's exciting. Like I said, I watched New Mexico Boise State. That was an interesting game.
Every time there's a Mountain West game, there's good stuff.
Oh man, no question about it. All right, we'll take a quick break and let's take a glance at football. We're not that far away from the spring situation. We'll talk about that more. It's Rams Weekly on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Yeah, the Mountain West Conference, on the basketball side of things. Who would have thought Wyoming would be 1-7? And as Kevin mentioned during the break, Air Force is actually not bad. They're not bad. They're kind of in the middle of the conference.
San Jose
right now.
State's legitimately solid.
Yes.
Potentially a postseason team. What's going to be super fascinating, obviously Wyoming has plenty of struggles, but they're not as bad as maybe the record would suggest. And if Graham Ike comes back, which is a giant if, put that in capital, bold, italics, and underline it. If he comes back, that team all of a sudden gets really dangerous, and they could wreck some seasons, just like CSU can.
They could go deep into the tournament and maybe win the third. They did that years ago with Larry Nance Jr., I remember.
That's the thing. When you have so many good teams toward the bottom, are you telling me CSU may not beat a San Diego State or a Boise State or a Nevada or
a
Utah
State.
San Diego State on the ropes last week. Basically alter their resume. And CSU's not the only one. Wyoming's going to do it. One of the teams at the top is going to go to Laramie and lose. And metrically, it will be a terrible loss. But in sort of practical basketball minds, you'll understand it.
All right, so prediction time, before we move on to the football side. Who's getting in? Who's getting an at-large bid in the Mountain West Conference? We talked about how good some of these teams are. Who do you guys, if you had to predict today, who's getting in?
I have San Diego State in, basically a lock. New Mexico, a near lock, but they still need to take care of business because their non-con wasn't very good. I think Nevada makes it, and I think Boise makes it. I think Utah State is a pseudo-fraud. I don't think they make it.
The one advantage Utah State has is the net rankings, the metrics still like them a lot.
Which is fine because they don't have any good wins.
Exactly. Well, they're a classic case of they did what like the KenPom metrics love, where they didn't play a lot of great teams, but they beat them by 20, 30, 40 points consistently. They didn't struggle with any of them. I'm with Kevin. I mean, I definitely think, you know, the list kind of starts. I think Boise's closer to a lock than, say, like a Nevada for sure.
Yeah.
I you know, their net ranking is up around 30 at this point. That's in really strong position. And given how good the Mountain West is, you know, I think they're in strong shape. I think three is most likely, but four is certainly on the table. And then, you know, if things break right, you get a bid stealer. All these top teams keep winning. Five is not off the table.
Well, it's a bummer for CSU that they're not kind of in the mix right now, in the thick of it, because as we've been talking about, I mean, I watched New Mexico and Boise State the other night. That was a phenomenal game, just back and forth. There's always a good Mountain West game in the mix, so it's a bummer that CSU is not really involved in some of the hoopla surrounding this conference. Spring ball, guys. Not that far away.
As of earlier this week, we are officially closer to spring ball than we are to the end of the season.
Wow. That's good.
Stat there. Good stat.
Somebody's
there.
Counting down over
Someone's
there.
Someone's ready.
Man. Yeah, you're ready for football. You're ready for spring.
I'm ready for spring. That's
yes,
what it is, man.
Warmer weather.
Snow and cold has been brutal.
Oh, man. It's supposed to get colder, too, this weekend. So good luck with that stuff.
Monday looks nice. Oh. Should be like one.
Hey, above zero. We'll take it.
Sandals weather. That'll be fun, man. How are we feeling about football? You know, Jay Norvell storms onto the scene last year. It was such a breath of fresh air because Adazio's gone. Our last memory of Adazio was him getting kicked out of the game. And then Jay Norvell is, you know, they're that close. Jay Norvell is beating him on his own field at that point in time. And then fast forward a couple of weeks later, it's Jay Norvell's back with his team. He's got the gas station shirts. He does all the fun stuff. He's networking. They're growing it. It's for Air Raid, Matt Mummy. It wasn't the season that they wanted. There was slight improvement at the end. What is the hype factor like this time around for CSU football, Kevin?
It'll be tamer than last year just because it's not as new. But the funny thing is the team should be, I'm not sure I should say much better yet, but definitely better, significantly better in a lot of ways. A lot more, I think this will reflect a lot more what they want to do, especially the offensive side of the ball. A lot of ways, defense was what they wanted last year. But the offense should be more of what Jay Norvell and Matt Mummy actually want to do. They have a lot more receivers in. You know, the guys like Justice Ross Simmons now have a year in the system, so they know it better. Obviously, Clay Millen got the year under his belt, did a lot of really good things, but obviously some freshman things. So I think most importantly, the offense should look more like it's expected to. Obviously, the O-line is the huge question mark that, you know, we can't answer until they roll it out against Washington State, really. I mean, obviously, we'll get some hints during spring ball, but you don't know, really, during spring or even camp, you know, exactly how an O-line will be. But this team should look more like what Jay Norvell expects his CSU to look like.
I think that is kind of interesting. You know, just there isn't going to be that same hype train as you described it this year. You know, I think a 3-9 season is always going to temper some of that. And I'm not trying to say CSU was some great team last year. But, you know, at the end of the day, they were still three or four possessions away from being a bowl-eligible team.
Yeah.
I mean, had two games at home. They could have won. You know, so it doesn't take a ton for them to improve. And, you know, so it's really on the margins. So even things like, yeah, having more receivers in the room, like you said, having another year for Clay Millen, it's not going to take a ton for this team to have a shot to, you know, I'm not saying, certainly not, you know, trying to build Mountain West contender expectations, but
Chris says CSU is going to they're going to the CFP. Wow.
They're going in undefeated.
Well, hey, I think Joe Parker said that on his latest podcast with Ram Nation.
That they were going to the playoffs?
Not quite. He did say that there's a, he envisioned CSU in the future being able to potentially contend for that.
Well, now that they've expanded,
yeah, with the 12
team, I mean,
absolutely.
There is a realistic shot.
Yeah, at least
now.
There's a path now.
Right now it's unlikely, but when your conference put together a really good record, you could get in there.
Well, and Kevin and I have talked about this before too. You know, it is interesting, you know, given the way that the, you know, AAC's kind of been sliced and diced and some of those good teams have moved up into the power ranks. At this point, the Mountain West has a legit chance to get their champion, you know, in the CFP every
year. Yeah, for
year.
The USC's
Absolutely.
Of the world and UCLA, it's like, why would you go join the Big Ten? I mean, you could just go run the Pac-12. You can, then you're going to have a better shot. Now you're going to go be in a group of four or five teams that are going to be, five or six teams.
I think there are roughly 7 billion reasons why they...
but then how much are they going to spend when they're like flying all over the country?
It's a wild situation.
I'm sure someone's done the math.
I guess.
But back to CSU, yeah. I mean, as far as coming up this year, I mean, having so many new faces, spring ball is going to be key, you know, to kind of develop, especially with this passing game. You want that chemistry to look a little bit more developed, more refined than it was this past year. You know, I don't think it was a bad pass. Clay Millen completed almost 70% of his passes. I mean,
yeah, he led FBS.
Making history.
Led FBS.
It's crazy.
But yeah. I still think, you know, even with not many incompletions, there wasn't a ton of great chemistry out there.
CSU, yeah. You know, staff would say that there was stuff left on the table, too, some missed chances and whatever. Another really good thing for CSU, I mentioned the defense. Freddie Banks is back. Buddha Williams is back. Jay Norvell on Ram Nation podcast said both of them had some pretty solid offers that they turned down to stay at CSU. Obviously, Mo Kamara, we were talking about Isaiah Stevens in the fifth year. Mo Kamara and Chigi Anuzium, two really, really key pieces of that defense, both accepted, if you will, a fifth year in our back. They add an Oregon State transfer at cornerback too. I'm very curious who the linebackers are going to be. That's kind of the one big question mark. But this defense, like, it looks like it could be pretty good.
And again, pretty salty.
And Jay Norvell said this at some point this offseason, that if we had our offense the way we usually do, and again, the success historically that they have shows the offense should become good, says if we have a defense like that most years, like, that's a conference title type team, because a lot of times he didn't have that in Nevada. But that D was legitimately solid, I think has a chance to be better this year.
All right, so some questions on the football side coming up next when we return. Avery Morrow, to me, was a huge surprise. I didn't expect, you hear for air raid, you don't expect really any running back to be good. But because of their struggles with the offensive line and Clay Millen actually having time to step back and throw, they had to rely on the run game, and then Avery Morrow delivered. Is that something, and think about this for the other side, is that something that we'll see really incorporated into this offense and maybe being somewhat of a staple as they transition back, hopefully, back into their true four air raid style? We'll talk about that next. It's Rams Weekly, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Welcome back to Rams Weekly. Just about to wrap up this edition. We kind of been all over the place. A little CSU women's basketball, men's basketball, football. But that's kind of where we are right now. I mean, we're getting close to spring. We're thinking about football side of it. It has been interesting talking about, the secondary signing day or whatever. We're looking forward to that just to see what this football team's about. And people kind of want to know. So more or less state of the Rams football at this stage. And guys, one of the, obviously I'm excited to see what Clay Millen can do in his second season with CSU. Torrey Horton and all those guys. But Avery Morrow, to me, was fun interview, by the way. He's just real business.
Oh, I love talking Avery.
Yeah, he's just like businessman, does whatever the coaches need. I didn't see that coming. There were other running backs on this team last year that I would have said, if they are going to have success, it might be one of those guys. I certainly didn't see a running back running for multiple games of 100-plus yards, and Morrow did that. Do you guys think, now this is for air raid, and I know Norvell will tell you, Mummy will tell you, it's not that we don't run in for air raid, we run the ball, but you don't see it as being a focal point like we did in some instances last year with Morrow. Do you see them editing this offense even more so, knowing that they do have kind of a good running back that can run like that?
So I think it's a yes and no. They've had some success with running backs. Tua Tua and Nevada had some solid seasons. They use it. It's not like they don't run the ball. So you're going to keep seeing that. Avery Morrow obviously showed he can run really well. I think the slight tweak we'll see compared to last year is there were times that – basically because they didn't trust the O-line, they would maybe concede a third down and run, see if Avery Morrow could get it, whereas this upcoming season, I think more of those will become passes. But Avery Morrow's for sure going to be part of this attack. I think like 700 is probably a target number if he rushes for that. CSU probably has a pretty good season. Some ways, you maybe don't want him charging for 1,100. Not that you don't, but it might mean that, again, their O-line is limited and they're having to concede some things. So I think he'll be a big part of it and just another weapon that goes with it. It can be some quick passes, it can be some deep passes, but also some runs. Just keep defenses really off balance.
I certainly like that you have the tool available in your toolbox, so to speak, at this point. I think, one thing I kind of would compare to last year is, and some of it was legitimately injuries, but some of it was just the limitations they had as a roster. It's almost like when players go out injured and you get guys that, maybe you didn't expect to star, you get them some of that work, you get them that experience. I think CSU this year, with Avery Morrow, he got that run last year. He's going to be confident running the ball this year. The offensive line got to run block for him, knows, what to expect. I like that they're going to have that tool available to him. But I'm with Kevin. If he's running for 1,000 yards again, I'm not sure that that's a great sign for CSU. But knowing that he can get you the yards when you need him.
And maybe the total yards isn't what we should be talking about. Maybe the average is what we should talk about.
Yes.
Because, he was well over 5 this year. And it's funny, way better than, a certain previous coach's regime who claimed to be great running the ball. So I think that's maybe the number to keep an eye on. If his average starts dipping to 4.4, it's like, well, it's not being used properly. Maybe that means they're running too much, or obviously not effectively enough. If he's staying in that fives number, that I think will mean the offense is pretty healthy, because the passing's going to be better. I don't feel like that's a hot take.
Anything on the offensive line that you can talk to us about, Kevin, names that you've heard that really stick out to you at this point?
I mean, they've signed, I think 3 or 4 transfer O-linemen, Savion Henderson. I'm blanking on some names right now. They have Jarvis is one. Those guys will probably start. Another, who's the kid from Lamar that they got? I'm totally blank. I'm sorry, young fella.
Hey, it's okay.
But I'll circle back there. But, those guys are going to be in that group. Jacob Gardner is one holdover who for sure will start. I expect it to be at center. That's where they wanted him last year. They basically had to move him to left tackle because Brian Crespo got hurt, and they didn't really have anyone else that could play left tackle. But I think Gardner will be at center. Crespo,
he should be
in the mix to start if he's back healthy, which I think he should be come fall. I'm not sure what his spring is going to look like. So he's in the mix, but definitely there's a lot of, I guess, competition, if you will.
Good, right? You want that, I guess.
Yeah, and also some young guys. Keegan Hamilton last year, he played, sort of was forced to play, but he'll be in the rotation. They just need more guys because most of the back half of last year, they basically had like 5 guys that could play. And, if they weren't playing well, Jay Norvell said this a lot, we didn't have competition. If you weren't playing well, we couldn't sit you down because there was no one to take your place. So hopefully they'll have more of that too. Because obviously the best competition is internal pushing for spots.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because you couldn't push these guys as hard as you wanted to because you didn't have any options.
Yeah. And players really know, it's not even a malicious thing that players do, but if your backup basically isn't capable of playing, again, you're not intentionally being like, well, I don't need to practice hard, but somewhere in the back of your head, you know that you will start on Saturday because you know no one can take your place. That's the biggest thing this CSU roster needs to fix.
And when your numbers are so thin, you maybe can't do what you want in practice to kind of sharpen them way.
That happened on the receiver side. By the end of the year, they had like 8 receivers at practice.
Yeah, so you can't really push them in practice the way you want. You can't sharpen your game the way you want. You can't always do the drills or work on the things you want. So yeah, having the numbers alone, even if they're not all great or going to push you for starting spots, just having the numbers allows you to get more work done.
Yep. Certainly. And that'll be, getting that offensive line fixed up will certainly have so much, I guess so much depends on what that offensive line looks like.
It was the number one question last year, and it's number one this year too. Everything else at least has enough in it for success. But that O-line, if it's not, if it's as bad as last year, which seems hard to imagine, but you know, that would tank the offense. If the O-line could at least be, you know, decent, that totally changes the game.
No question about it. So we'll be exciting to see, you know, what that group looks like, that offensive line specifically. I think we all agree kind of the defense should be pretty decent next year. As Kevin mentioned, the inside linebacking core will be a question mark on the defensive side of the ball. But getting Freddie Banks back might be it for Freddie Banks if they have a good year.
In some ways, you hope so. Yeah. And again, this is a conversation we've had about Nico. Like, you don't want... You know, if you're a CCU fan, you don't want your coach to leave, but if that talk is happening, it's because they're successful.
Yes.
So if Freddie Banks is such a hot item, you know, this offseason, whether it's to be a P5 coordinator or even a head coach, it's probably because CSU had a pretty decent year. So in a weird way, I think CSU fans should hope that come next December, we see Freddie Banks' name all over Twitter.
I agree, but with kind of a clarification. I think for CSU fans, this year, I'm not saying it couldn't. I mean, we've seen crazier things in college football. But, you know, it's unlikely that this year is going to be a championship contender level season. I think what you would hope for is a season that shows clear signs of improvement. You know, maybe get in that 6-7 win range. Show, hey, we are going to be there, you know, maybe the following year. But maybe, you know, maybe the guys like a Freddie Banks.
You would love if you could get two seasons.
Yeah, not quite there. You know, build on it enough this year to where you have big aspirations. But maybe, like I said, maybe he's not quite that hot name yet.
But again, it's been a long time since CSU has had assistants that anyone wanted. So it's a good sign that Freddie Banks, Buda Williams, you know, I would imagine Chad Savage will be in that conversation too. Again, that's a nice problem to have because it means your head coach hired good coaches.
Yeah.
And you're at least finding some good success and recruiting well and all that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because how often do we remember talking about, oh, are they going to be able to keep this coordinator? Especially after a bad season, but you're still saying, oh, they were good enough defensively where Freddie Banks' name is coming up in a big way. So when are we looking at spring football?
Yeah, so it starts mid-March. The spring game is April 22nd, so fans can circle that one. It should be a lot of fun. I'm sure there'll be a lot of events for everyone on that.
That'll be great. We'll see you in the meantime. CSU, we'll talk more about it, of course, but CSU women's and CSU men's basketball as well. Maybe they can both get rolling. That's been Rams Weekly here on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1. 1310 KFK. Check out the podcast available at 1310kfka.com.